Let's say hello to our NHL insider, Chris Johnston, as we kick off the program. My name is Pat Steinberg from the Basement Systems Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Hello, CJ. What's going on, brother?
Not too much, Pat. How are you keeping?
I'm good, man. I'm good. And the first thing that I thought of, I was like, I got to talk to CJ about this, is I saw you put it on your Twitter last night. John Tavares says, yeah, I wouldn't mind a challenge when it comes to goalies pushing their net off. Do we have, so 5-4 the final score. Maple Leafs almost complete the comeback on Chicago last night. And there's a lot of people wondering whether or not Hawks goalie Colin Delia pushed the net off there in the final seconds. What was your take on that situation that I think was probably quite controversial in your neck of the woods?
Well, it was. I mean, the only reason it probably didn't even blare louder is because the Leafs were down 5-0 in the game, and so it right. wasn't a game where you could totally excuse the home team, you know, no matter how that ended. But, you know, I wondered a little bit about what happened there. I mean, I think he did. I think it was an accidental on purpose kind of situation myself. You can understand, you know, John Tavares made that comment 5 minutes or 10 minutes after the game ended, and he would have been the one that scored the tying goal when that happened. So I can sense or can sympathize why he might have had some frustration in that moment. But, you know, I do think this is an issue that the league, you know, they did talk about it at the GM's meeting last week. And you know, I could see it being something that's addressed in a small way because, you know, I think that the bigger issue isn't what happened in Toronto on a Wednesday night in March. It's if this, you know, comes up in the playoffs in a one-goal game where a team's under siege the way the Blackhawks were, and the goalie's able to get some respite for his teammates and you know, kill the offensive momentum another team has. So, you know, it's not going to be changed for this year, but, you know, I think the league is a little cautiously concerned or just aware that, you know, it's something that could come up again, and you know, I think they want to curb that as a potential way to you know, I guess kill the momentum late in the game.
So does that what would be the fix there? Would it just be an amendment to the rule book? Would it be a provision that you could challenge that, or it could be reviewed on video? What would the change be?
I think that there's probably going to be more of an ability to have it so that the opposing team, the defending team, can't make a line change if the net comes off in that circumstance, to empower the referees to be more liberal with calling a penalty in that case or even awarding a goal. And, you know, at the far end, I would say, is the review, which is what John Tavares had suggested, that, you know, in a scramble like that, it's difficult for the referees to pick up on exactly what happens because generally they're watching the play where the puck is, and the goalie's usually knocking that off subtly when it goes in the corner or what have you. So, you know, I don't think the league is all that eager to add more video review, although they definitely have talked about it. So I would think you'll see kind of a graduated system. You know, they'll maybe give the penalty some more teeth and put in some small disincentives. And then if that doesn't work, we might see a little bit more video review applied in that case.
What is your overall feel on where video review is right now in the league in terms of what it's covering, how it's being used, the consistency of the calls, all of it? What's your overall feel?
Well, it's a tough thing because obviously cameras are getting better and the technology is improving. The ability to get calls more right is there. But, you know, I think that there's a concern about slowing down the game. And you know, if you have too many different things that can be reviewed, I mean, we can imagine how frustrating that might be for a fan. I mean, I think, you know, part of what's being discussed in at the league level is, you know, how do they keep young people interested as it is? And you know, and slowing down the game and having a lot of disruptions is not necessarily the answer. And so, you know, I'm okay, actually, maybe I'm a Luddite, but I'm okay with some calls being wrong or not being as right as they might be. And just in the sense that I think it's better for the sport and, you know, especially the offside reviews is one that's gnawed at me since they brought that in because, you know, we've seen goals called back. I was at a game in Long Island, New York Islanders, Florida, a playoff game. And it was a call where literally on the ice, I don't think a linesman could have made a better call. I mean, with the human eye was not capable of being accurate to the degree that a goal ended up coming back on. And to me, if the players don't stop playing and that sort of situation happens, I mean, that should be a good goal. Yes, you can slow it down and look at it by the microsecond and maybe determine that the wrong call wasn't made or the best call wasn't made. But, mm-hmm. you know, I don't personally love that. And I'm willing to live with even mistakes with high sticking. I know that's one. I think if we're going to see something added to video review, it's going to come on high sticking, you know, because there's been instances where players have been cut and it's their own teammate's stick, say, and a 4-minute penalty is awarded because that's an automatic penalty if there's a high stick. I think that's one where the referees, even there was a referee was in the room last week at the GM's meeting and he was consulted on it. And that was one the referees even are in favor of because they just feel it's almost impossible at times to tell in the course of the play if it was, you know, done on purpose or your own stick or a teammate's stick and it could be a punitive call. So, you know, I think that one I don't mind as much as it should be a quick review, but it's a tough, you know, this isn't going away as a discussion point. I mean, whatever issue we could conjure up, whatever happens in tonight's games that could be controversial. I mean, generally, yes, with video, you could be sure you're getting the right call, but there's a cost to that too. And I think that's what the NHL is kind of fearful of is not bogging down the game too much.
Well, and for me, CJ, it comes down to, like, I don't mind if they expand the scope of what is reviewed as long as they don't up the amount of challenges that are allowed. Like, I think that you should still only be allowed the one challenge. But, you know, if there's – it's the black and white ones that I think are interesting. You mentioned high sticking, and the other one that's interesting to me is the over the glass. I don't like as much the judgment calls and ones that are subjective. But if you've got a late power play in the third period that's caused because of the delay of the game with the puck going over the glass, but, you know, you actually think that went off another stick, there's one that you can review and you can negate a power play. Like, those ones seem to make more sense to me than ones that are a whole lot more subjective.
Yeah, and what we don't want, too, is we don't want the guys challenging the play just to get a long time out, you know, where they're literally wasting time, which I still do think happens at times on goaltender interference where there's a bit of a question and the coach isn't expecting necessarily to have a goal brought back, but instead of calling his timeout, he'll at least, you know, try a challenge on it and give his goaltender the idea that he cares about him and he's trying to get a goal called back, give his team a chance to chat at the bench. You know, that's what I don't like. But, you know, at some point, I think we have to figure out what we're comfortable with as sports fans. You know, I see in baseball, they're going towards robotic umpires in some minor leagues and with the idea that if it works, you know, maybe we'll see that in major league games. You know, I think part of what makes sports great, and obviously when you're a fan and it goes against your team, you hate it, is that there are some mistakes and they kind of go down in lore. I mean, there was a missed high stick way back in 1993 in a series with the Leafs against the LA Kings in the Western Conference Final, and it's still talked about insanely, you know, 25, 26 years later in Toronto is something that happened. I mean, a little bit more serious, obviously, is the goal and the Flames Cup game, game six, yep. That I saw brought up during Jerome's retirement ceremony there a couple times. But, I mean, obviously Flames fans would much rather have had the cup there, but it's something that, you know, mistakes do happen. And you know, for me, I don't mind a certain degree of error, I guess, in these types of things. But I'm guessing I'm the old guy in the room here, and probably as we go on in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I think we're going to see more video review and you know, an attempt to be more right than we are today.
Yeah, it's the whole conversation is fascinating. And you know what? I think as long as the sport is going to be played by humans and we talk about errors being part of the game and, you know, errors make for some really exciting plays on the ice, I think that it's still got to be officiated by humans. I'm firmly like, yeah, if you want to have video review to help out the human eye, sure, help it out, but I still think it's got to be officiated by humans. That's where I would really draw the line. So I hope that that's not where we're going down the road, whether it be baseball, hockey, or otherwise.
Pat and CJ yelled a cloud here.
Yeah, I know. What's going on? No, get these umpires. Rob Kerr would be very proud right now. Rob Kerr would be very proud. Chris Johnston is with us. He is our Thursday NHL insider here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Let me ask you about this. In Ottawa, Eric Brännström making his debut tonight in a game against the St. Louis Blues. It's got to be a nice little bright spot for the Sens, knowing how miserable this season has been there.
Yes, big time. And you know, I think that this is, you know, this is an important prospect for this organization because, you know, today they had a season ticket conference call with the general manager and members of the front office on the business side, you know, which isn't something that happens in too many places, especially in Canadian cities. And, you know, they're at a point where they've lost season subscribers at a pretty alarming rate. Obviously, attendance is down in their building. And, you know, getting Eric Branstrom was, for the Senators front office, the win of the Mark Stone trade, is getting that level of a prospect, someone who, you know, obviously they believe is at least ready to play some NHL games right away, and certainly next year, I think, have him penciled in as a part of their team. And you know, if he delivers on his talent and promise, I think that it makes what just happened at that trade deadline at least slightly more palatable, because, you know, most of the rest of what they got is lower-level prospects that are going to take some time to develop, and obviously a haul of draft picks that will take even longer. So, you know, this is an important guy for the franchise, and I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, it was on that conference call with the season ticket holders that Pierre Dorion announced he'd play tonight, and we'll see what he can do. I actually saw him in an NHL game that was played in Toronto earlier in the week, and he looked good. I mean, he's small, but we've seen that small can work for defensemen nowadays. Some of these guys have so much talent, and so I think that Branstrom is an intriguing prospect for the Sens, but he almost carries a little bit more import than just your average prospect because of you know, the way he was acquired and the fact that they were, you know, gave up three pretty talented players at that deadline, and he's the biggest current piece they got.
What do they have a plan for? What happens going forward? I mean, that fan base is so sour and worn out, and they have every right to be. Like, do the Sens have a plan as to how they're going to keep their fans engaged and not lose people in droves here?
Well, they've tried to articulate that plan. I mean, the idea is acquiring as many young guys as they can, and they've committed to spending a lot more, you know, once they feel they're in a position to be competitive and a few years down the line. You know, I don't know whether that plan will be effective enough. And obviously, even this level of transparency where you have the GM on a conference call for an hour with fans, I mean, I can't stress how unusual that is. And you know, I think it's a direct, it's clearly, you know, trying to win the people over and to be as open as they can be. And, you know, nothing sells like winning and hope. And I think that the problem they have there is they haven't been able to even sell the hope because, you know, all the great players that have come along get traded away. I mean, today, Pierre Dorion was asked by a fan if they're the Montreal Expos of the NHL. And he, you know, he took issue with that and said they're not. But, you know, you can see why a fan might make that comparison when you see Erik Karlsson traded away, Mark Stone. You know, if you want to go further back, you have Daniel Alfredsson and Jason Spezza, Kyle Turris. You know, all sorts of players that were meaningful members of the team that were shuttled under mysterious circumstances or before their primes had ended. And, you know, the team never, you know, seemed to get enough back to justify making those moves. So, you know, I think hockey's been big enough there that they can survive, but, you know, they're dealing with at least a small C crisis. And I think that's why they've engaged a PR firm and they're trying to do things differently. And, you know, ultimately I think they have to build a winning team and to restore some faith in their fan base.
One thing I would imagine Senators fans are not going to be watching is this year's draft lottery, because I don't think they want to see what happens with their pick that Colorado owns right now, but they've moved it up this year. How come the NHL is moving the draft lottery up a couple of weeks this year?
Well, I think the feeling was honestly just get it over with. I mean, why drag it out for the teams that aren't going to participate in the first round of the playoffs? I'm sure there was a television element to it. I didn't ask our bosses here, but, you know, it kind of times nicely with doing a playoff preview type of show and have that at the same time. And you know, I like this better, to be honest. It felt a little strange when it was at the end of the first round or just before the second round at the end of April. The way they've done it a couple years prior to this one. And you know, if you're currently following a team that's clearly out of the playoff picture, I think a lot of fan bases nowadays want to see at least some tanking or losses, and then you want to see what happens in that draft lottery. And you know, I think there's some practical reasons in terms of, you know, planning for the organizations before some of the spring, you know, under-18 tournaments and those type of things. But also just to... there's not really a compelling reason to delay it further unless TV wants it that way. And I guess the TV overlords have consented to having this happen just a couple days after regular season expires.
He is Chris Johnston from Sportsnet or NHL Insider on Thursdays. Final topic for you, and that's what we saw last night in Edmonton. The Oilers lose 6-3 to the New Jersey Devils, but for a third straight season, Connor McDavid gets to 100 points. How much longer is this okay with him, what's happening in Edmonton? They've had two miserable seasons after the one playoff year, so he's going to have one playoff appearance in four seasons, and it doesn't look like the Oilers are knocking on the door to return anytime soon. How much longer is McDavid okay with this?
Well, my sense, honestly, is that he's going to be okay with it probably longer than most of us would have guessed. You know, hockey players for a long, proud history are unfailingly loyal. You know, I think he feels a responsibility, even though, obviously, I don't know how anyone could label what's happened with the team in the last four seasons really having anything negatively to do with him. He's more than delivered on the promise he entered the league with during his time as an Oiler. But, you know, I think he's going to stick through the program and, you know, give them a chance to complete this GM search, hire their GM, get a sense what the plan is. You know, I don't think he's that involved in it as much as maybe he could be if he cared to be. I think he's just... prefer to be a player and let it play out. You know, obviously his agents are watching what's going on and his family, but, you know, I don't get any feeling at all that he's close to bagging out. And, you know, that could happen. Things can change if next year is as miserable as this year was or the year after. I mean, it's always possible. But, you know, with him signing that 8-year contract there and you know, becoming the captain and really committing that organization, I think he'll hang on, as we've seen, frankly, a lot of, maybe not players of his quality do as much because, you know, he is a generational star. You know, the only comparable I can find is Mario Lemieux was on, I believe it was four straight years out of the playoffs or five with the Pittsburgh Penguins after he was drafted first overall in 1984. But, you know, typically the best of the best don't have to go through this, but we've seen a lot of good players over the years stay loyal on teams just hoping that things will turn around. And look, some teams surprise each season. If they can get creative with their cap situation, it might not be as far off of the turnaround as it seems today, as they're, you know, playing at the string and losing games on back-to-backs to the Devils and what happened last night there.
Well, and I mean, to that point, I mean, I know John Tavares is in Toronto now, but he stuck it out a long time with the Islanders. So
three playoff runs in 9 years. And he was a Hart Trophy finalist and point-of-game player and he got vilified when he left, so, you know, go figure.
Good stuff, CJ. Appreciate it. As always, my friend, we will talk to you again on Tuesday. Thank you, pal.
Thanks, Pat. Have a good night, man.